History That Doesn't Suck is a legit, hard-hitting American history podcast told through entertaining stories. Join me, Professor Greg Jackson, for History That Doesn't Suck, an Odyssey podcast, available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Payoff pitch. Heriberto drives out to left. How far is this going to go? We're tied. Smacked onto the concourse. 422 feet. And Big Bert, in a pinch hit plate appearance, gives us a brand new ball game. Jacob drives high in the air, plenty deep enough. That is off the wall. Edwards going to trot in from third. A high arcing fly ball sails to the top of the wall in right. Marcy drives in the winning run, and it's a walk-off for the Fish. The train keeps on rolling.
Joe, another incredible finish for the Red Hot Marlins. We're going to head out to the Toyota of Hollywood Hotline. Shop over 2,000 Toyotas on sale. One location, Toyota of Hollywood on 441 between Hollywood and Sheridan, toyotaofhollywood.com.
Wow. I don't know what to say, man. 50 and 42, third wild card position, and chasing just a few games behind the National League East and behind the Braves and the Phillies, and just playing as good of baseball as we've seen in a long, long time. Clayton McCullough, the Marlins manager, joins us right now. What the heck happened June 1st, Skip? What happened? What did you say? What did you say June 1st to this team?
I don't know. I think we just – look, some of it coincided with we weren't playing very well, and guys understood that, and we felt like we had a much better team than, you know, how we were performing, and we had some guys get injured kind of, you know, in succession, some starting pin, bullpen, and I give our group a lot of credit, our staff, and the players for looking at it and going, you know, we can feel sorry for ourselves, we can make excuses, or – we can look around knowing we have enough talent in this room to go win major league games, and we just have to play. And it needs to, you know, just needs to happen. So guys kind of, I think, rallied around some adversity, and we started pitching a lot better. I mean, the month of June that Sandy had, wow. Max Meyer. So I think that it started with our pitching and the defense getting better, and then we were able to get some guys going at the plate.
So it is funny that you watch on TV these games, especially the road trip. Just had a great road trip, including sweeping out in Sacramento the A's. I just see a lot of confidence, man. I see a great chemistry with this group, and it just seems. And now Jacob Marcy. I'm probably bouncing all over the place, but we get him going in center field with that bat, and that's got to do wonders for your confidence with that big hit he had off the wall last night to win the game. It just seems like the whole group is really rallying. No matter what move you make, it seems to be working right now.
Yeah, they really are. I think they're all incredibly prepared. Again, it goes back to our coaches and players. They're prepared for their moments. And we've had to, run our pitching a little bit differently here the last month at times, based on circumstance. And I think guys have just been willing to step up and do whatever's called for. You mentioned Jacob Marcy, such a big hit for him. I mean, we all know, and it hasn't been the, you know, performance statistically wise, the start of this season that he and us were hoping, but you know what? He's hanging in there. He's playing good defense. This is a tough league and great moment for him. So yeah, it's been a lot of different contributors, Joe. And that's the great part. I think what it takes with a team is, you know, each night someone else seems to kind of be the hero.
Yeah, wow. And now you've got all these wins, and it seems like every time we turn around, it's a four-game winning streak. I wanted to ask you, the Otto Lopez story is just incredible, and it's nice to turn over to MLB Network and seeing him getting some love. And Max Meyer has really pitched well enough, for a couple more wins, and he's going the All-Star game, both those guys. It's good to see two guys get in there and both well-deserving, huh, for you?
Oh, I mean, it is. What is Otto, third organization, you know, he was a waiver claim. I mean, which means anyone could have had him. And, you know, Peter and, you know, our front office identified him. You know, he got an opportunity here. He's a great dad, hardworking, great teammate. And, I think that's what makes it more special, Joe, is you watch some of these guys, you know their path to getting to this point. And now here he is leading the league in hitting and setting franchise record for multi-hit games, you know, before the All-Star break. And it seems like, you know, every night, and he keeps getting hits now, and you just look around like, man, this is,
yeah,
you know, this is unbelievable what we're watching. And so good people, when good things happen to good people like that, it's even more special. And Max Meyer, again, this wasn't that long ago, he's a first round pick, and a lot of expectations, a lot of hype, and some unfortunate injuries and some inconsistent major league level. And you know what? Max never doubted himself. This organization never doubted Max. And, you know, here he is now kind of putting it all together. And, you know, again, between him and Sandy at the top of a rotation, they've really just able to stabilize things all year.
I guess the only thing that's been questioned is what you got to see up close out in Sacramento. I you got to run me through Eury Pérez in his 7 perfect innings, the 8 strikeouts, only 92 pitches. You had him on a pitch count. Tell me about that conversation when you're talking to him. Obviously, he's got great stuff. We kept him around for a reason. We're seeing it more and more every time he pitches. Just run me through the whole thing there, Skip.
Yeah, so, I mean, he's, you know, maybe his 3rd start coming off the IL. And, you know, we've been, you know, methodically, you know, kind of build up the pitch count and the workload. And so, I mean, even the day before, I talked to him and just say, hey, look, just letting you know, like, it's going to be somewhere probably in the 90 to 95 pitch range. And, you know, we had, you know, he got up to like 85 the start before in Colorado. He was on regular rest, you know, it was on a normal 5-day. And so I had told him that. So going into it, number in mind, and it's something, again, before the game, we talked through different scenarios, and kind of 90 pitches plus a batter was going to be the mark. And I mean, you know, yeah, now he has a perfect game. And I mean, I know, Joe. And then I, you know, like, look, I don't know. I knew going out there, I knew the criticism that was going to come. And like, you know, and like, I have to be okay with that. I really felt that where he was at coming back from this, and where we're hoping to go, how important he's going to be to that. That I felt it was more important to look for trying to protect him long-term. Now we don't know what would have happened, and I get it. I totally do. The only person I feel bad for is Uri. Like I didn't give him a chance to go out there and continue on. And I felt like I was doing it in his and our team's best interests moving forward. But I certainly understand the criticism and, you know, the backlash and questions that come from it.
I always wonder, because you're in a unique situation. It's not like this happens every night, right, where you go through 7 perfect innings, you need 6 more outs to get the perfect game. Do you look at your pitching coach, or is that just like, well, at the end of the day, I'm going to take all the heat, so I'm going out there? Did you ask other people about it? And obviously, I know he's had injuries and stuff, but yeah, I just wondered. You're going, wow, oh boy, this is going to get interesting now. Did you reach out to some of your coaches?
Oh, certainly. I mean, my coaches, Dad, Daniel Moskis, our pitching coach, Carson Vitale, our bench coach. I mean, all throughout the game, we're talking, you know, and those are things, you know, we're discussing about what might happen. I mean, a lot of things pregame we discuss strategically, and then in the moment you have to be able to pivot. So I'm certainly talking to those guys. You know, I mean, we're all aware. He's at like 60-some pitches through, you know, whatever, like 5 or 6 innings, and kind of like, you know, we know what, you know, we had talked about. And so like, hey, this is, you know, looks like this is happening, you know, and it's kind of like, what are you going to do? Like, ultimately I have to make the decision. It's my decision to make, and I take counsel and guidance, but ultimately I got to make it, because I'm the one that has to do things like this and answer for, you know, why these decisions were made. So I'm okay with having to answer for it. And I understand the criticism. And again, we'll never know what would have happened.
Right.
Joe, but I just felt like in that moment, I was going to stick to what I felt like was best for him that day with where he's at and coming back from.
Yeah. Hey, so, trade deadline, you know, everybody's, we're getting a lot of it now. People going, well, they said now if we're in position, hey, listen, we haven't had a team this good in a long, long time. And I don't think it's going away. It just looks like you got a lot of young guys only getting more and more confidence and getting more and more comfortable. They've now been through this more than just this year, and all signs are that this thing's going to be really good. Have you guys talked about trade deadline? Have those discussions started on things you might do?
Yes. I think that we'll, you know, things will be, the tires will be kicked in on a lot of potential possibilities. And look, we still have quite a ways to go until that point.
Right.
But I think we're also excited that, I mean, the players that we have here currently, like, are at a, still at a stage we're watching them get a lot better. So it's like we're going to have players that are continually getting better, and we anticipate to get some others back from some injuries that will help, you know, bolster our team. So I think there'll be options either way. And yeah. I think all myself, our staff and players can do is just try to control what we can. And that's going out there and just continuing, you know, to play well and get better.
Clayton, I always hear this in the last few years. We have a joke here in town that the guys that get mentioned in trade talks more, Tyler Hero and Sandy Alcantara, the most of any athletes that we have here. And I'm sure now Sandy's pitching great with the 10 wins and going to get another start before the All-Star game. So I wonder how do you feel about him, man? He's been so good and so consistent. I know you can't talk about it, and that's not your decision totally, but boy, I'll tell you what, I just say as a fan, I hope Sandy's around, man. I just think he is a key piece to this whole thing.
Yeah, look at his month of June. I think he tied a franchise record with going so he just won its seventh consecutive start. The franchise all-time strikeout record, the innings he's throwing this year. I mean, he's been like he has been for so many years here, kind of the foundation for what a lot of the things that, you know, are built upon it, and his ability to go out there and post and take down innings and win games for us has been incredible. It's been really a big part of what's fueled this run that we're on. And look, good players get talked about a lot. I think that's why, you know what,
yeah,
his name comes up a lot of others around the league, because people want good players. The team that has them does, and other teams do. So Sandy's been a top flight pitcher in this league for a long time. And so I think he is just himself that, again, he's just got to go out there and keep pitching, and there's nothing that's within his control. You go out there, you keep, you know, pouring in for your teammates and going to win games, and, you know, things will take care of themselves.
Have you been surprised on just how, I mean, this is unbelievable. 24-8 since June. This is not just a 5 or 6 game winning streak. Oh boy, this thing's been going on for 6 weeks. You're surprised to see your team with 50 wins and in a playoff position right now?
I'm not surprised that we're playing this well. I mean, but it's hard to win that many games in a short stretch.
Right.
I mean, to win 20 games in June, you have to play well, and also a lot of things have to go your way. So I think we've been able to create some of our own opportunities, but we've also had some things go our way. But it comes back down to, like, why I think that we're in this spot is our pitching staff has really performed. They cut their walk rate. Our offense, Alex Stowers getting hot, and Owen Casey, you know, then you got Otto X and Liam, who have steadily been at the, you know, this chart. So we're getting a lot more contributions there. Berto Hernandez lineups lengthened out. And then defensively what Joe Mack has done behind the plate, as well as Xavier, Otto, Marcy up the middle. So you look at it and go, okay, our defense has been playing much better. We're pitching at a higher clip and we have more guys performing offensively, and like, okay, that's a good team. So I think we're good. And, you know, I think the recipe for how we're doing it lines up to what we believe in. It's a matter of, like, understanding that you get too complacent in this, or you get too comfortable. This game can humble you quickly. So we just have to stay hungry, you know, each game, each series.
Well, I'll tell you what, I love the chemistry and everything you guys are doing, Clayton. It's been fantastic. And by the way, it was really nice to turn my TV on last night and you guys have a long road trip and you come back home, and I see you guys out doing great charity stuff for Venezuela and what they've gone through, the earthquake victims over there. And I know some of your players are from Venezuela as well. And it was just great to see you guys out there in the community and raising money over the next couple of games.
Yeah, very important. Myself, our organization, Javier Sanoja is certainly very special to a lot of us, but I mean, the baseball community in general, the number of, you know, Venezuelan players that are being impacted, their families, and then those in, you know, the greater Miami area. And so understanding that it gives us a chance, the platform we have to, you know, ultimately about this, go do something for other people, try to help how you can, whether it's raise awareness or provide aid, and felt like that's our obligation. And but also, you know what, you know, being a good person is far more reaching than what we do professionally.
Yeah, no question. But boy, we sure like winning a lot there, Skip. There's no question about it. That just adds to it. So many great stories and throwing guys out and guys going extra bases. And like now, Liam Hicks, I swear to God, you can't just talk about one guy in this team right now. You truly are getting it from a lot of, and I hope we don't get rid of anybody. I hope, because I'm with you. I like the group we have, man, that are playing every day, and some of the key guys that Sanoha at third base. My God, did you have any idea? He's basically going to be a full-time third baseman. He's so good. And his bat, he is just clutch. Unbelievable. Another guy, right?
Yeah, he's such a good player. He is. Forget that he's just 23 years old. But, I mean, last year it was probably, he was more in that utility role. He played some short, second, a lot of outfield, some third. And this year, kind of how things have played out, third has been in a position where we kind of just, had an opening and kind of whoever could go seize it and take it. And, Javi has certainly, he's done that. He had a great road trip swinging the bat. Like you said, the clutch hitting, he's not afraid of anything. So love, every time he's up to bat, you feel like something good is going to happen. And he's just a tough, tough kid who, he's ready to go every day.
Well, listen, Clayton, I appreciate you coming on, man, explaining everything about the perfect game and this team just being smoking hot right now. It's been great, and we always appreciate you coming on in the middle of a series. Another game with Seattle tonight and tomorrow, so hopefully people can start going out and watching. It is a fun product to watch, so thank you so much.
Of course, Joe. Love the visit. Thanks for having me.
All right, Clayton McCall, Marlins manager, joining us here as he gets set for game two after the nice comeback last night. Nice comeback. Woody?
You know what we got coming up tonight, Joe? We got the 4 for $44 deal.
My favorite.
Yeah, I know you like this one.
They four game in, tickets, they put four that hot in dogs, a couple four years ago. Waters. Yeah, that's a good one. That's
and got... four small popcorns. You like popcorn, right?
Love popcorn.
You're okay to eat popcorn. So that is tonight.
Love popcorn.
At 6:40. Then on Thursday, this is right up your alley here, Joe. Senior days. You can even take a friend with you. You get two complimentary
your
tickets.
Your poor dad. I can't even imagine what your poor dad has to go through with you. Yeah.
Friday night, we got the $5 Bud Happy Hour. 21 and up fans can enjoy $5 beers at Budweiser Bar before the first pitch. And then we got fireworks. It's also Military Appreciation Night. They have a jersey package available for that one. Saturday, we got the USA 250th celebration, red, white, and brew. We got a USA jersey package, and we got a Legends Pin Series package with Charles Johnson.
Love CJ.
Yeah.
One of my favorite all time. He's everybody's favorite.
Yep. And then on Sunday, we got a Billy the Marlin shoulder plush for the first 10,000 kids. We got alumni selfies, and we have Top Gun Day.
Yeah.
They also have the 4 for $44 that day as well.
They have a lot of great stuff, man. Listen, you get a really good group behind, marketing group behind, and then the team, the way they're playing, it's been fantastic.
Queen Carvania stood haloed by the morning sun. An army hung on her every word.
My champions, I have sold my chariot on Carvana. 'Twas a lovely SUV, an inexplicably queenly offer. They're even coming to the castle to collect it. Tonight, we feast!
An offer you can feast on. Sell your car today on Carvana. Pickup fees may apply.
Lemonade! Fresh squeeze lemonade! Lemonade? Oh, nuts.
Is your business struggling to be seen? Not reaching the right customers?
Yeah.
Odyssey's here to help. Your one-stop shop for digital marketing.
Wait, really?
With targeted digital media, plus SEO, SEM, social, OTT, and more, we help your business reach the right audience and drive results.
Whoa, hey, one at a time.
Stop missing out on valuable customers. Visit digitallocalads.com to learn more about our local advertising solutions. That's digitallocalads.com.
Okay, people, line starts here.
The great Jason Jackson joins us on the Toyota of Hollywood guest line. Over 2,000 Toyotas on sale at one location. Toyota of Hollywood on 441 between Hollywood and Sheridan. ToyotaofHollywood.com. Your radio voice of the Miami Heat, Jason Jackson, joining us there. Hello, Jax. How are you?
How could I be bad? How could I be bad right now? I'm out here doing what has to be done for the people.
If everything's official yesterday. The Giannis news finally goes through, Jax. But, like, what has your mind been like with all of this summer circulating? Was it going to happen? The rumors, the back and forth. When it finally becomes official, like, what goes through your mind?
Well, first, it's to be a part of the Miami Heat for 20 seasons plus now, I think season 23, my Jordan season coming up, you just know the deal, right? But I'm also a human being, so you get excited about the possibilities. Then you get the reports from Shams, confirmed by, you know, Anthony and Ira and Tim and Barry. And then it all happens. But you do have to wait. And I said to somebody recently, and Leroy, you might, first of all, happy healing. I'm glad I'm here. Jason in Greek means healer, so I'm glad you have me on. It's perfect time. But I would flip the calendar for the NBA and make it more like the NFL. I want free agency first, right after the final, and then the draft. And some people disagree with me, but it's the whole the moratorium and the waiting and the money and the fiscal year and all that. I'm getting too old for all that shenanigans. Give me a pen, give me some paper, give me some announcements. Because I can't, you know, I'm a press release guy. But I'm shut down until the press release comes out. So I'm glad there were a few of them yesterday.
Well, Jax, if you do it the way you're talking about, it makes teams more motivated to make moves before the draft.
Yeah, man.
And they kind of sit back and kind of say, well, we want this, this, and this. But in a draft like this, there were a lot of teams making moves to get into this draft because it was supposedly a really good draft. If you just if you move everything to that time frame, it does make things a little more fluid and kind of gets teams moving. And can we stop putting the wrong hat on?
This is what I'm saying. If you do it the other way around, you just get tidiness. And I'm a big fan of the Tide Pods, and so why not have some tidiness?
Like, all a fan of, like, what the roster was, Jackson. You know, we tune into every game and whatnot. But, you know, D-Wade said it last year. I think the word that he used was buzz. You know, what kind of a jolt do you feel like this puts in? Like, what has the vibes been around the building, the people with just, hey, a two-time MVP is now part of the roster?
How about for the third time in Heat history? 39 seasons coming up, right? The third time in Heat history, you're arguably getting the best player of that era, if not one of the best handful, right? When you bring in Shaquille, when you bring in LeBron, when you bring in Giannis, I mean, MVP caliber player that leads the way and then everything around them. I was saying it today as I was taking money at the Biltmore from Old Men, is that, oh, I'm sorry, I was playing golf, by the way. Let's clear that up. But the buzz, right? Heat games are always fun. Always fun. Great thing to do if you can do it. But the thing that really, really gets it going is when that star power is radiating every night. That takes nothing away from the rank and file. You got to have everybody, as Shaq calls them, the others. But, man, you know what it's going to be like. You know whose feet are going to be on the wood. Can I get to the Kelce family down at 601? I mean, that could happen.
Jax, so
nobody wanted that. Nobody wanted any of that right there. Nothing. I'm sorry. Is it the Swift family? Did I say it wrong?
I don't know. I mean, that's probably if he goes Travis Swift, I don't blame him.
I wouldn't be mad at him.
I don't blame him. What, if you're renting out MSG for the nuptials, I think that you know that's gonna take a lot of sway on it. What do you think?
As Leroy knows, it'd be tough to get back on the east side of Cleveland with that decision.
What do you like? How do you feel for a guy like Bam, Jax? You know, has got to be such an interesting pairing for him to have a guy of his physical stature next to him. I'm kind of curious to see what this is because he's coming off a 2010 season. Obviously, he's got an itching to get back deep in the playoffs. What do you think this does for him?
It's just joy, right? I mean, this is excitement. It's think about what this defense potentially can be. I mean, and that's the part of obviously Bam's game and resume. I mean, he will demand in a conversation about his now decade in this league, kind of a full view of his play, but obviously the leading edge being defense. This has the potential to be one of the best team defenses ever. And I hope they embrace that type of pressure and expectation, because it does take a little bit of time for all the offensive stuff to get together. We've seen, you know, Heat premier mega teams put together and recognize it doesn't always click in the first season. I'm perfectly fine if it does, but some of that takes time, and it will be an adjustment offensively. Somewhat, you know, I fell in love with Spo's approach offensively this year, and I think, you know, you get some of these new pieces going downhill. It's gonna be fun to watch as well. But for Bam, this has to be, I don't know if it's fully a dream come true, but, you know, they share representation and they've been battling, and now they get to do it together, and that's special. And I think all the extra pieces, the ones that have been kept, the ones that will be added, also complement Bam's game as well. And so, you know, he's I'll see him soon. I'm headed to Vegas tomorrow night, and I'll tell him that people are asking. And you should get on social media and give a full report.
Jax, this seems like one of the situations where the Heat made every attempt to go young and develop and hold on to players, and it just got to the point that said, we ain't those guys. Let's go do it the way we've always done it. And they kind of going back to that.
I think that was a sizing up of what the landscape was going to look like. In 26, 27, 28, and you put yourself in the right position for that. And thank God it worked out.
Right.
And I think while you were going through kind of a youth movement, that was enjoyable. You all might fight me on this. I think, Tobin, you're with me on this, is that watching everybody who's now not on the roster and those guys that remain show us their baby teeth, watch them fall out. Watch those grown men teeth come in. Thank you, Tobin, for watching FIBA.
What a day. What a day it was yesterday, Jax.
I need you to do that for me. I'm glad you did. I'm glad you do. Because I don't even want to look for it. But that stuff, right? How encouraging is that for the pieces that are coming? And then having built pieces that were worth a blockbuster deal like this. I mean, that's part of the management, right? That's right. Part of the strategy of being able to do what this team has done now and put itself back in championship contention.
It's such a fun thing, too, because you watch Pella yesterday. I was watching him against Slovenia, and it's such a different thing because he's getting every shot. He is their team, but so you have to watch the poor guy crash into 100 people the entire game, Jax, to go get to the free throw line 15 times. He's never going to do that in a Heat jersey because of the other star power that's there. He's going to dive for loose balls and connect. But it is fun to see him just kind of get to as you say, cut his teeth and show a different side of him bringing that even more to a level. And I think that probably will help coming in because, you know, he's already shown himself pretty capable these first couple of years. And so whatever role he's in, he always just finds, like, whatever Pella you need him to do, he's going to do perfectly. And that's why I think the organization likes him so much and is probably glad they were able to hold on to him.
Utter glue, though. He has adhered the glue guy role to himself. So that's glue on glue. That's very sticky. And I'm so proud of him, and I'm excited to see where that's going. We all have to be excited about what's happening for Nico right now, obviously. And the stuff we're not seeing, right? The continued work and elevation of Drew Smith. And I'm so glad the work is already starting for Davion. Like, just on and on and on. I can't wait to see these new pieces of the mix. Mr. Bow Wow returning. You know, like, it's really starting to feel good. And there has to be more pieces. And
right.
And those of us that are sickos, right? And just watch three summer league games out in San Francisco. And like I said, I'm getting on a late flight tomorrow direct to Las Vegas. So I'm in place for the later part of this weekend and the rest of the weekend for the beginning of Vegas summer league to just, you know, to touch the people as Battier so wonderfully taught us a decade ago. And it's wild to be back in this mode in early July going, when's the schedule coming out? Show it to me.
You got it. What's the over under, Jax, on whether the first time Tim Hardaway stops by the booth or is at your desk and you start bringing up, hey, your son's playing with your franchise now, and you're going to see the one tier roll down because he's going to be so goosey's galore about seeing that name on the hardwood again.
Well, on the audio experience, we'll mic his face so that we can hear the tears rolling down his face. And then over on, I'm not sure what we're calling the TV shows just yet on WPLG, but hopefully on pregame and definitely on postgame, we'll make sure he slides by. I'm sure he'll be with John and Eric in the booth. And listen, the greatest point guard in Heat history is welcome at all times, and this full circle family experience is one of the most beautiful stories woven into the Heat experience. It makes me choke up a little bit because I think about doing a feature years ago when Junior was still in high school. And I think this is before Pops was going to the Hall of Fame. This is before then, well before then.
Right.
And I went and did a feature in their house about the cohesive nature of their basketball journey together and Tim learning to be a better basketball father. And that stuff feeding me because my kids were starting to play new sports as they're not quite a decade younger than Tim Jr. So I love the Hardaway family, and I'm so glad that the story that they have been trying to get told and written now will be done at 601 Biscayne. It's unbelievable. Unbelievable when you think about it.
Jax, I'm going to do you a favor because you, when it comes to talking on a golf course, you're a Hall of Famer. Like
All world Hall of Famer.
Okay. Yeah. When you get off the plane in Vegas, there's a restaurant called Herbs and Rye. Just go in and sit at the bar because it takes a month to get a reservation.
Okay. Well, I mean, I might call somebody and call somebody.
It will be one of the most enjoyable eating experiences you have. It's off the strip, but Tobin's been there. Every time I go to Vegas, I go there and eat.
Meat happy hour.
I can't explain it. It's open.
Herbs and Rye.
Rye.
Oh.
Herbs and Rye. Yeah.
Herbs and Rye. Oh, Lord. Yep. Okay. I'm not going to forget that now.
Yes.
Okay. I thought you were sending me to a joint that wasn't going to fill my belly. So I was.
No, you ain't going to have to worry about that.
Safe travels, Jax. Appreciate the time, man.
Thank you very much. Jennifer, before I go, can I get some tickets to Disturbed, please?
Of course you can.
Thank you very much. Was I the third caller?
You're always the third caller.
Trifecta, you betcha.
Jason Jackson does a fantastic job, and we appreciate him giving us some time.
Hey, what's up, Flies? This is David Spade.
Dana Carvey.
Look, I know we never actually left, but I'll just say it. We are back with another season of Fly on the Wall.
Every episode, including ones with guests, will now be on video. Every Thursday, you'll hear us and see us chatting with big-name celebrities.
And every Monday, you're stuck with just me and Dana. We react to news, what's trending, viral clips.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
Ira Winderman is on the Toyota of Hollywood hotline. He has covered the Miami Heat for almost four decades. Four decades. Longer than you've been alive, Solana. He is.
Yeah, it's true.
He's heading to Vegas for Summer League tomorrow. Ira, you have packed your number 34 Giannis jerseys. I know you bought a few yesterday. And what else did you pack? Some sunscreen. And what do you bring, like tens of thousands of dollars in cash?
You know, with my line of credit there in Vegas, I really don't need that. So I just show up. I get this thing that you common people don't know is called a marker, and I sort of just go from there.
I've heard about it from Joey Porter, I believe. Joey Porter had a marker.
Hey, 200 grand, Ira. Joey Porter had a $200,000 marker at the Palms.
And like Joey, I also have a lien on my house at the moment because of last summer's trip to Las Vegas.
I have a magic marker in case I need to highlight something. Ira, the misstep from the Heat yesterday, and I want to talk about Giannis and all this stuff. I just happened to find it fascinating that they're selling number 34 Giannis jerseys, and the Heat never make a mistake like that. They are the most buttoned-up organization, certainly in South Florida, but I would say in the nation. They never air that way. And I'm curious what you think happened. Do you think Giannis told them that he's taking 34, ends up doing that live stream? They suggest, hey, what about changing your number? And he made like a momentary split decision and decided to go with number 7?
Yeah, I think they were totally caught off guard. I don't think there was any way they knew that was coming. I think just like all of us out there, it's wait, what, really? And they, because you could see it, every marketing they did, it was with a number 34 jersey, and then they had a hustle. And you know what? It just shows the power the players have these days, because any lesser player would be, you are not taking Ryan Conwell's jersey. That kid's already wearing it in San Francisco in Summer League. It's just so different. And you know what? We talk about LeBron and all these guys, and they come in and people think that they're pushing it too much. The superstar in sports gets whatever he wants, whenever he wants. And here's the crazy thing. If Giannis decides today, yeah, you know, I'm going to stay with 34. Boom. They'll put him back on there. They'll undo him. They'll resell him, because when you're the superstar, you make the decisions. And that's what Giannis did. I do think it started on a whim. I think that he had absolutely no idea. I mean, think about this, guys. They knew for 2 weeks that Giannis Antetokounmpo was coming. And they went ahead and gave number 7, a sort of storied number in the franchise. Obviously, Goran Dragic, the great Kyle Lowry, the great Khalil Ware. And they went and gave it anyway to Ryan Conwell, so they can have no idea whatsoever. And then I like what Ryan Conwell said after the game last night in San Francisco. It's like, well, did you sell him the number? Did you? Yeah, he's Giannis. He takes whatever he wants.
And Ira, to that point of us normal people, like that communication with Pat and Spo and, you know, all the people in the organization, when those guys come in, like, we think everybody's sitting down in a room and deciding on everything. Is that realistic, or is it when they get in town and when they're face-to-face every day?
Oh, there is a ton of spontaneity. You know what? He'll even do their travel schedules. And before a trip, Giannis will go, yeah, 9 o'clock doesn't work for me. Let's make it 2:30. I got plans. My kid has to go to the dentist. And they change it. The superstar in basketball, maybe outside of Solana would know this, the superstar in soccer. I mean, Ronaldo gets whatever he wants. Messi gets whatever he wants. But I think even more than the quarterback in football, the superstar in basketball, because only 5 play at a time, gets whatever he wants. So you can say all you want. We have Heat structure. We have Heat rules. Look, what was the biggest story when LeBron left? They didn't let him have his damn chocolate chip cookies. Believe me, whatever. I know for a fact now, because I checked. The first Heat flight, for some reason, baklava for everyone. So believe me, he's taking care of everyone.
Ira, perhaps a trivial question, because in the grand scheme, it doesn't matter. I think Wade and LeBron proved that this can be worked out. But when LeBron came here in 2010, the question was nationally, well, whose team does this belong to? Is it Dwayne Wade's team? Is it LeBron's team? And ultimately, I think LeBron James took that from Dwayne Wade, and Wade willingly gave that up. Whose team is this? Because Bam Adebayo is, you know, the guy who carries the culture forward after Wade, and then UD handed him the torch, and Pat Riley has said time and time again he wants to build around Bam Adebayo. But Giannis Antetokounmpo, to your point, is the superstar. Does it matter whose team it is? And does Giannis want it to be his team?
Well, first, we know it's still Mario Chalmers' team, but we'll go on from there. But when you look at this team, Bam is the perfect guy to have here, because he's been unassuming. He's let everyone else be the star. Boy Wonder, Tyler Hero, petulant Jimmy Butler. He just does his role. He does it well. He goes back, you know, talks about his mom, Family Guy. It's the perfect guy to go from a number one to a number two. And guys, I got to be honest. Bam never was a number one. He was sort of foisted into that because of the Jimmy trouble and the trade they had to make and other things that went sour. So, yeah, everyone knows this is Giannis's team. But like Giannis said in his farewell video, it's one thing to have been the guy in one place, but you still have to come in and reestablish. A lot of you know this with Bumpgate and LeBron, with Eric Spoelstra in Dallas and all he went through and the whole villain thing. This is something that Giannis never has had to sort of go through before. So it's going to be interesting to see how much he seizes the moment and how much he tries to be team player. The two differences here versus anywhere else, the legacy of Pat Riley. We saw that when Tim Hardaway showed up yesterday. And Eric Spoelstra's worldwide respect from the Olympic Games. You know, Giannis has spent plenty of international time with Eric Spoelstra. So I think those two factors, who's the man in Miami? Until he leaves, Pat Riley's the man. Who's the man on game day for the Heat? Until he's done, Eric Spoelstra's the man. It's a lot easier. When you have that at the top, you can make anything work except Jimmy Butler.
Now, when you add LeBron James into the mix, who's the man?
I think LeBron knows. This is, you know, I was thinking about this, Hawk, last night, and some of these cockamamie places LeBron might go to, Denver or Minnesota. And I keep thinking of things like Patrick Ewing in his Seattle Supersonics and Orlando Magic jersey. Robert Parrish playing for Charlotte and even Chicago.
Oh, I don't even remember this him playing for Charlotte.
Yeah. He did. This has to make sense. If LeBron goes to Cleveland, it's a beautiful story. If he comes to Heat, it's a fascinating return. But anywhere else, it's like, what's he doing here? This makes no sense. If he comes to Miami, it'll be seamless. I kid about the chocolate chip cookies that Pat Riley took off the plane, but there's plenty to commiserate. There's plenty. They've been through the battles together. It makes sense. But if you're asking me, please don't aggregate. I know every writer says that these days. Cleveland makes too much sense. It's just, if you're going to go out and you're not going to do it just for the money, to me, that makes the most sense. And I really can't wait to see him fight with the ball with James Harden at the end of games. Because if you think he went crazy with J.R. Smith, when J.R. Smith dribbled out the ball in a loss in the finals, can you imagine putting up with playoff James Harden?
And do we need to add more? Because I use the analogy with bringing LeBron, like build the most beautiful home and he'll move in. Do we have to add more? Because if we add more, now we're taking money away from LeBron. Like, how do the Heat get LeBron James?
You know, this whole thing about the Heat not having enough, and Solana knows this, he was around the Heat all last year. What about Andrew Wiggins? What about Davion Mitchell? Like, there's talent here also. Everyone is sort of saying they just have Giannis and Bam, but there are other players who contributed in a winning way on this roster, and they'll get a couple of other players. They have up to two spots left. To me, the most curious thing, again, I'm not thinking that LeBron comes here, but if he does, is the Bronny James factor. Because right now it looks like the Heat are only going to fill two roster spots to stay close enough to the hard cap that they can add a player in case of injury, emergency, late in the season. So if LeBron is one and you have to trade for Bronny with the Lakers and the other, then you're done. Then Channing, we can sit here and say, is this enough? But they can get one more piece, whether it's a Bradley Beal, like you mentioned, and a resurrection. I happen to like DeMar DeRozan because I know he'll give you clutch baskets, because the one thing this team doesn't have right now is a shot creator. Matter of fact, I'll throw it around the horn with you three guys and ask you this. Tie game, 5 seconds to go, Heat out of timeouts, inbounding from the far baseline, so they have to bring it up. Which Heat player right now is their shot creator at the close of a game on the current roster?
Nikola Jovic.
You know what? For Serbia's national team, you might be right because Jokic
hooping.
Is too
stop it.
He's yeah. hooping.
Stop it.
He's hooping.
He is. In FIBA. In FIBA, he's fine.
They would have peddled him. They would have peddled him in his contract this offseason if they could have, yes?
In a heartbeat, yeah. But they don't have any more draft capital that makes it easy enough to get off $62 million. My point being right now, I don't know who that is. I know I don't want Giannis shooting a jumper at the end of the game. I don't want Bam to have to go full court. It might be sort of a crazy run, you know, head down to the basket by Pella Larson, but they don't have that guy in an end game who's the shot creator. Tim Hardaway, he's a shooter. He's not a shot creator. It might be. Remember how the last season ended. It was Davion Mitchell going right. Full court and getting his shot blocked at the end of a game. That still might be as good as it is. So, Channing, when you talk about is their roster full and complete, you can't have an NBA roster without a shot creator because you know you're going to play in clutch games. And in clutch games, you have to have the guy. Giannis doesn't play that game. Bam doesn't play that game. That, to me, is the plus one I'm still waiting on. I'll take DeMar Rosen. He will pull up into a mid-range jumper, and he's so good, he will either get fouled in a tie game for a free throw, or he'll make the jumper. At least he'll give you something. Right now, they don't have that.
Hey, Hawk hates Bradley Beal. I don't know why, Ira, but he hates Bradley Beal.
I hate the conversation. I don't hate Bradley Beal. We've talked about Bradley Beal for a decade. I'm correct. Done. I'm tired of talking about Bradley Beal.
No, I mean, I still remember when Bradley Beal helped Dr. Naismith, you know, hook up the peach basket there. He's been around in Heat conversation so long.
But literally, it's almost been a decade that we've been talking about Bradley Beal. Let's move on here.
he's also 3 years removed, which in NBA years is a long time from being a really good high-scoring player. But the injuries are a concern. That's why when people go, DeMar DeRozan, he's 36. He only shoots two-point baskets, but he does it. And he's available. And he can get it done. I think that's the direction they have to look right now. That's why I was surprised they didn't make a play for Anthony Simons. Yeah, he might be an out-of-control shot creator, but at least he's a shot creator. I mean, it's almost like they need to like go to Indeed or something and advertise for one.
Let's say they don't get Bradley Beal or DeMar DeRozan. Let's say the roster is what the roster is, essentially. Yes. You've got Bam, Giannis, Andrew Wiggins, Davion Mitchell, Pelle Larsson. Who am I missing? Tim Hardaway, Bobby Portis.
Right. Simone Fontecchio. Don't forget.
I was just in Italy.
Right.
What are they in the East?
Here's the thing. We talked about this at the top here. It depends on Giannis's level of motivation. If he's, I want to show I can still do it. I'm still the man. I'm still worth that extension. That's going to pay me $60 million a year. Ultra motivated 70 game. Giannis Antetokounmpo, they're in the top three in the East. If he doesn't have it, this will turn into a horrible trade because all of a sudden you've given up the whole ship. You've given up your entire draft future and you're paying the guy $50 to $60 million a year. This is absolute blind faith, but desperate times. And that's what they were, Hawk, four straight years in the play-in, call for desperate measures. So this is an all out Hail Mary, but at least you're doing it on a Hall of Famer.
Does it feel like in your gut that it's going to work? I feel like it's going to work. I feel like he's motivated. I feel like last season was kind of an aberration. And I think Giannis and Bam, I was saying this yesterday, they're not load management guys. They're not guys who want to take time off. Like, those guys like to play.
I think talent trumps all. And you're talking that at least 40% of your lineup is all-star, all-NBA level. And again, don't sell short Andrew Wiggins. Don't sell short Davion Mitchell. Don't sell short Tim Hardaway. Yes, in case of injuries, they're screwed. Everyone's screwed in case of injuries. I think there is enough there. In an East, that is very competitive. But there is no Thunder. There is no San Antonio Spurs. There's not that level. So I'm saying, can the Heat play 50-plus win basketball? Yes. In the East, that's all you need. In the West, you got 60 win basketball with the Thunder and with the Spurs. It's a different league, which is why it makes so much more sense if LeBron at least wants to get back to the NBA Finals, that the East is his path, and that's where I think it goes through.
And Ira, explain to me the Jaylen Brown thing, because I've heard so much stuff and unnamed sources saying he's the smartest guy in the room and all. There is no way Jaylen Brown should have went for a 1 or 2 and a 467-year-old Paul George. What happened? Why did the Celtics do that just to get rid of Jaylen Brown?
Because the NBA is a hard cap, salary cap league more and more, and the percentage of his salary versus his productivity from a team standpoint, he wound up being overpaid. The problem with the NBA is this. Instead of guys negotiating contracts, there's a maximum. So what do you want? I want it all. And that's the only decision that the Celtics and other teams got to make, is decide whether to give him all or not. He was overpaid, Channing. So in other words, Jaylen Brown, is he a $60 million player? God bless him, no. Is he a $50 million player? We can debate it. And this sounds crazy. If he was a $40 million player, you wouldn't trade him. But when you have a hard cap, you have to make difficult decisions. It's almost like the Panthers with Bobrovsky. Is he better possibly than any goalie they have now on their roster? You can make the argument, but for the money he wanted, they couldn't fit it in a hard cap. So Jaylen Brown in a no cap baseball world, if he was Ohtani, I don't care if he's making $90 million. There ain't no hard cap. They're just a tax I've got to pay. But in a hard cap sport, you have to constantly do this cost-effective equation. That's what the Heat did with Tyler Hero when they didn't extend him. And that's why they didn't want to extend Tyler Hero, because they realized that his price point would be over his value relative to a hard cap. That's where Jaylen Brown got into a trap. No fault of his own. He simply made too much money. And people ask me this all the time. You cannot renegotiate in the NBA. It's not like other sports. If you were due X amount, you can't walk in unless you rip up your contract and say, you know what? I'll take 50 to help the team. You can do it ahead of time like Jalen Brunson did. But once you're locked in, you're locked in. Jaylen Brown's biggest fault was not being the smartest guy in the room. No problem with smart guys. His biggest problem was he made too much money. He negotiated too good a deal for himself.
And no one on this video stream can say the same. No one here makes too much money, and no one has negotiated.
I think Ira's doing well.
Too good a deal for themselves.
Wait. Ira on Layoff Paper University? Come on, guys. Come on. I'm glad I'm still here. Every morning I check the email to make sure it still works.
Read Ira Winderman in the Sun Sentinel and follow Ira on social media at Ira Heat Beat. Safe travels to Vegas, Ira.
Yes, read me the Sun Sentinel at least today. Thank you, guys.
All right, Joe, it is time to head out to the Toyota of Hollywood hotline. Shop over 2,000 Toyotas on sale, one location, Toyota of Hollywood on 441 between Hollywood and Sheridan, toyotaofhollywood.com.
I'm really enjoying this tournament. It's been a lot more fun. It's been great having it here. The fan bases from all the different countries that have come over here, the United States, have just made it. And the stars have played like stars. So I had to find him. I had to track him down. Chris Whittingham, host of CBS Sports Galazzo and Apple TV MLS. Wait, it's been a while. How you doing there, brother?
Yeah, good. How are you, Joe? You all right?
Yeah, I'm hanging in there. I'm doing all right for an old guy. Thank you. Hey, God, Chris, there's so much to talk about. I got to get right to the Egypt, the finish, the ending to the Egypt up 2-0. Should have been up 3-0 and end up losing Argentina and the Messi shot to tie it up and the whole thing. But Egypt is really upset about consistency and fairness of officiating, calling it an injustice. What was your take? I don't know enough about it, and one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you, they get it away from them. They don't call a foul or penalty at the other end, and they go down and beautifully put together to score.
And, yeah, it's one of those. It's a modern one because VAR has come into the game. It's been 8 years now that video replay has been in the game, and I think that move kind of is the antithesis of what people wanted. What people wanted was really bad refereeing mistakes to be overturned. Okay. And that didn't feel like a really bad refereeing mistake. I still think it was a refereeing mistake. And I do think that the goal only comes because of a refereeing mistake. So I don't necessarily disagree with getting rid of that call, but I sort of appreciate all these people that are like you tuning into the World Cup that don't watch soccer very often that are going, wait a second, why is the sport that already doesn't have very many goals forensically looking over plays to get rid of more goals? So I sort of understand why people are upset about it and why Egypt would be upset about it, because not only did they have a goal chucked off, but then at the very end of the game, the third goal for Argentina starts with a move that could also have been considered a foul and actually a penalty kick for Egypt, which would have given them the lead rather than Argentina the lead. So I think that there's an inconsistency in the application, and unfortunately, it just always feels like it's Argentina who end up on the right side of it. So yeah. I think that's where a lot of the rage comes from.
Chris, it's funny because you know the complaining. You follow all our sports and know them very well here, and the NBA officiating, especially in the playoffs, people are mad. NFL officiating, especially in the playoffs, and now we're seeing it in the World Cup, and it's so funny. And then you go back and watch all these things are going on. But the one, and again, Egypt behind it, complaining about officials and referees coming from different countries.
Yeah.
They know where everybody, that's a different low. We don't do that with our officials, but when you go to the country, that's a passionate deal.
Well, and it's been kind of a fascinating few days for that. So the ref in the Argentinian game was French. And then in the France game, they got an all Argentinian refereeing crew. And so there are a bunch of people on social media going, well, wait a second. Wouldn't the Argentine ref want France out of the World Cup so that Argentina have a theoretically easier path to winning this thing?
Right.
And that is when you sort of get into loony land for me, because like I said, there was a French referee doing the Argentina game. In theory, if we're saying these are competitive people that want their country to win,
yeah,
the ref doing the Argentina game being French, the French referee would do everything he can to get Egypt through to the next round so that France have an easier final. So yeah, I think people get into conspiracy land with this stuff, and it's only because it's fueled by scandals of the past, not necessarily with referees through FIFA, but, you know, the Italian league had an enormous scandal with referees. The Turkish league actually just had a massive scandal where basically every referee was found to have a betting account of some kind when that's frowned upon. So there are these things that make you feel like the game isn't above board. But I think you have to take it a little bit more credulously and say that the people running FIFA know what they're doing on this stuff.
Chris, we critique everything everybody does and big games, and, you know, the superstars are under, you know, under the microscope, no question about it. Landon Donovan went after Christian Pulisic like we don't even do with our teams, very seldom go after him. He not only went after him personally, but he said his teammates, the sponsors, staff, and coaches are fed up with this guy and the people around him, including his family, his friends, his agents, and then just said he just nobody wants him, and they're killing him for not being involved with the team early when they were getting games together to build up some chemistry. I'm just curious. You know the guy. You know what this United States thing's all about. What's your take on Landon Donovan's comments towards Christian?
And it's not even just Landon. It's sort of been open season on Christian Pulisic. And I think this is something that a lot of people have been harboring for a long time. I'm not among them because I've never dealt with that side of the Pulisic machine, as it were. But I do think that there are a lot of people that have gone, we've been coddling this guy for a long time. We've been, you know, not saying what we actually think. We know that he's the big star and we have to treat him like the big star, and that come this World Cup, he's going to deliver. That all of the other stuff that you've dealt with where he had a bad end to his club season and, you know, whatever experiences other people have had. Like I said, I've not had them, but I know some people who have. And there, I think a lot of people were saying, if this guy doesn't deliver in this World Cup, then it's open season. I think people have been waiting for this for a long time. And it is a bit of a bummer because if you go back 10 years ago, when he was starting his career in Europe, even when he was playing with the national team as a teenager and the U.S. failed to make the World Cup. I don't know if you remember that game in 2017 when we lost to Trinidad and Tobago, and that was the reason why we didn't make the World Cup in Russia in 2018. Pulisic played in that game, and he was devastated after that game. So he's been with this program for a long time, and he has been the great hope of the team for that amount of time. And so the fact that he not only comes out and delivers a really poor performance, but then comes out afterwards, and this is, it has been said to have been taken out of context, but after the game, after he dealt with an injury and after they got eliminated, he said, "Now I can rest." And that seems to have been the quote that really upset a lot of people. Ouch. Where people go, "Really, you can rest now? Like, I thought you would put everything into this World Cup, and now you're looking forward to resting? No, you should be looking forward to licking your wounds and being upset and all the things that we want our athletes to be upset about after they lose a game." But yeah, I think this was simmering under the surface, Joe, and now people are finally letting out what they really think.
Yeah, wow, I guess so. U.S. men's.
It feels a lot like Tua, Joe. It feels a lot like Tua.
Oh, we said where... that. That's already come up on the show. Yeah, it's like, that's like, really? Did you just say that? Like, I literally was coming in on Monday morning. Like, I can't. He did not say that. I mean, you're right.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's it was bad. So I got to ask you, every 4 years we have this, where is the United States in soccer? Yes. Is it getting better? Our youth programs, can it get better with the MLS Academy teams taking these guys in their teenage years and developing? Some go, like Pulisic, go overseas, but they're always going to play for the United States. We're going to get there. And some of our NFL athletes and NBA athletes' kids are starting to play soccer. Are we ever going to look at having number one, one of the best players in the world, and number two, a team that can be top five or six in the world?
I think at some point, yes, but it's just such a hard step, Joe. It's such a hard step that so many countries are trying to take. And yet, in all likelihood, if you look at just sort of the path to the semifinals, it's the teams that are always there. If you look at it right now, the path is probably France, Spain on one side, England, Argentina on the other. It's always the same teams. There have only ever been, Joe, 8 teams in the history of the World Cup. We've been playing this thing since 1930. 8 teams who have ever won it. And it's so hard for a 9th team. And that, I think, is the biggest step. So I think the U.S. have made a lot of steps from being, you know, a team in the mid-30s to a team that never qualified to now a team that regularly qualifies, that regularly makes the last 16. But last 16 to quarterfinal is such a big jump, and it gets into all of the structural things, which is it's not our number one sport. American football is our number one sport. Basketball is our second sport. Baseball is our third sport. Hockey, you could argue, is our fourth sport. So you're not getting the number one athletes, which, you know, obviously is part of the conversation, if not all of it. Then you have, I think, the prohibitive cost of kids playing soccer, where you're losing, I think, a lot of people slip through the cracks because, and Landon, actually, you mentioned Landon Donovan, he did an interview where he said that a study was done that only 2% of the kids playing organized club soccer come from families that make less than $50,000, which is the complete opposite of how the sport works around the world, where it's working class sport. Over here in the U.S., it's rich kid sport. And unfortunately, there is just going to be but so much of a ceiling when it's rich kid sport.
Yeah.
And so I think that there are any number of reasons why we're not there. But like you said, MLS is doing incredible work in this regard. A lot of the players in this current team were developed in MLS academies. They make the jump to Europe. You try and get better in Europe, but there just have to be more because the U.S. really lacked depth of this tournament. They only really trusted 13 guys. So you got to develop more players. And like you said, that idea of a world-class player, there's so many countries that have almost tripped into having world-class players, and somehow we haven't yet.
Chris, you know who the happiest American is right now watching this tournament? You're going, gosh,
who is
American.
That? Who is that?
That'd be the Moss brothers right now because Messi.
Yeah.
I have more people come up to me, Chris, and I know it happens to you. I got to go out and see this guy. Now everybody's saying he's one of the great. Now they're saying he is the greatest player. 39, what he's doing, his emotion and the way he's playing in this tournament only helps Inter Miami in the popularity, which has already exploded.
For sure. And I think, Joe, sometimes MLS struggles with points of comparison where people think that MLS is a lower level, but I guess the question is how much of a lower level? And then you watch this guy who goes out there and kicks everyone's ass every week in MLS, then do the same thing to the very best teams in the world. You go, oh, so this guy isn't washed and doing it against a lower level of player. He's still the same guy. He's still the same guy that can go out there on a World Cup stage and beat everyone. And when they're 2-0 down against Egypt in the last 20 minutes of a game, he can still be the one that summons the superstar all-time winning moments that get them over the line. And he's the guy that one of the great football nations in the world still relies upon at 39 years old. And it's not a Ronaldo situation where Portugal rely on him and he can't do anything.
No.
It's they rely on him and he carries them over the line. So I think that's the biggest thing for Inter Miami now is you can say, not only you're watching this great all-time great player, he's still a great player. You could easily see him winning the World Footballer of the Year award. This is the award called the Ballon d'Or. You could see him winning it if Argentina win this tournament because he has been that good. And that is the ultimate PR for, just because he's doing it at MLS doesn't mean these guys are bad. It just means that he's that good and you have to go see him.
Chris, I got to ask you, I know you're a young guy and sometimes older guys get upset with this, but is he the greatest of all time for what he's done?
You know what? I don't lean on my own judgment because like you say, I didn't see Maradona, I didn't see Pele, I didn't see all these great players down the years. But by the way, people have been saying this since he was young, which is incredible. 2009, 2011, after he wins the Champions League, after he leads that Barcelona team. People have been saying this for such a long time that I am inclined to say yes. So even though there are, Pele won 3 World Cups, Maradona won 2 for Argentina and obviously had the incredible 86 World Cup in Mexico. There are some all-time great, and even there are people who will say Cristiano for what he did in the Champions League and all that stuff, but I'm inclined to say yes, and I actually don't even think it's particularly close, which is incredible and speaks to how good he is.
Chris, man, it's great having you. I wish we had you around here every day. Chris, thank you so much, brother.
Yeah, no worries. Fantastic. Anytime.
Appreciate Anytime. It. All right. Thank you. Chris Whittingham joining us. Talk a little bit about soccer/football as all the stories and everything going forward here, including another great game today, man, with France getting ready to play.
Make money from your podcast with the Odyssey Creator Lab. You create the show. We bring the advertisers. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com.
All right, welcome back, you rascals. Tobin and Leroy here with you on FM 104.3 WQAM.
Very excited. Joining us in studio, Leroy.
What?
The voice of your Florida Panthers. The great Doug Plagans is here. Doug, thanks for the time, man. Really appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me. It's great to be here in studio. The only thing missing is my buddy Leroy.
Yeah.
He's here.
But... Yeah, well, I got other... First of all, I popped my bicep. So it's looking kind of nasty right now. And I got painters at my house. So
okay.
I don't know what's worse. Dealing painting with, or my arm.
Dealing with pain or people. That's the that's the duo.
Sometimes pain hinders you from dealing with people.
Yeah, that's true. Obviously a crazy summer, Doug.
Yep.
Obviously a crazy summer. I'm going to start off with the heartbreak because Sergei Bobrovsky is close to my heart. I'm very, very sad to see him go. Could you believe it? Like, I know it was kind of in the ether, but like the fact that you're no longer going to be calling, you know, the gymnastics of Bob for the Panthers between the pipes. Is it a little surreal that he's moved on to Toronto?
It is going to be different, no doubt about that, because that was representative of an era in Florida Panthers hockey, an era for the franchise, and the highest level of success that they've achieved was with Sergei Bobrovsky between the pipes. He was the man in net for both of those Stanley Cup wins and played at a Conn Smythe level in 2023, the run that just fell short. Sometimes I think we forget, because obviously the couple of championships came afterward, how good he was in terms of just helping the Panthers get to that Stanley Cup final in 2023 when they ultimately lost to Vegas. But, you know, you look at just the way things take shape and a reminder that it is obviously a business in the National Hockey League and the faces change sometimes. And I think the big thing to be mindful of here, yeah, that was a success. The most success the Panthers franchise has had was with Sergei Bobrovsky in net. But this team is still good enough to be a contender, maybe the favorite to win the Stanley Cup this year. And a goaltender coming in who's a couple of years younger than Sergei Bobrovsky, who's got 264 wins in his, could hit the 300 win mark this year, depending on how much he plays and how much success the Panthers have. This is a goaltender in his own right, Jacob Markstrom, who comes in, who at his A game, his elite level, is certainly good enough to backstop the Panthers to another championship. So they're happy with where things ended up, but fully understand it's going to be a change and an adjustment for a lot of people, not just to see Sergei Bobrovsky elsewhere, but to see him four times a year in the Atlantic Division playing for Toronto.
So, Doug, I get a little thrown off by it because I'm not a hockey guy. And early on when Bob was here, everybody would say, you know, look, Bob is great as the defense in front of him. Like, we've struggled with how we defend in front of him when we left him too wide open. And so then when that turned around, and then we start seeing him, his performance get better, is maybe the franchise thinking we can do that with somebody else as long as what we have in front of him is acceptable and as good as it's been?
Well, I think with any goaltender, a huge part of it, and this isn't to say that Sergei Bobrovsky's not a future Hall of Famer, because he is.
Right.
He's going to be, you know, as soon as he retires, the acquired time will elapse, and then he'll have a plaque in Toronto with his name on it when it's all said and done. He's got two Vezina trophies, a couple of Stanley Cups. He is climbing the all-time lists on a number of different categories. So he is an all-time great type of talent. But, you know, if we're looking back on it now, if we're looking back at the 7 years, yeah, there were some ups and downs, especially earlier in Sergei Bobrovsky's tenure with the Panthers. There were some ups and downs, and then as the team really came into its own, and as Paul Maurice comes in, and the structure gets put in place, and the talent that Bill Zito continued to be able to assemble, as all those things came together, it positively impacted Sergei Bobrovsky in his results and his stats, and that's going to be the case for any goaltender out there. Look at the Carolina Hurricanes, for example. The goaltender that was in net when they ultimately did close it out, win the Stanley Cup, was a guy that they had, and this isn't taking anything away from Brandon Bussey, but a guy that they had gotten off waivers before the season that was kind of a journeyman up until this year. And I think we did learn that it was a guy that just needed an opportunity and, you know, has a future as an NHL goaltender in some capacity. But yeah, it is a position that is largely, you need those goaltenders that can make the three or four huge saves a game, because there are going to be big chances throughout a game. But a lot of it also is, you know, dependent upon the group that you have in front of you and the structure they play with and the, you know, the way that they defend. This Panthers group is going to be very structured, is going to defend really well. They always have under Paul Maurice. And on top of that, it's the best top three forward lines you're going to find in the league.
Crazy.
They're going to score goals. So all of this lines up to be a very favorable situation for a hungry and excited goaltender, and Jacob Markstrom has come to town.
I remember the day that they traded for Brady Tkachuk. I didn't think it was real. I like kept looking at my phone. I'm like,
parody account.
This is not real. Because like we always kind of joked about it last. You know, we're always like, oh, okay, it would be fun if the brothers played together. But like, I didn't think it was. I didn't think it was serious. And so like, I'm like, it needed to like download for me for a second that I can't believe that Bill Zito did this again. So give us your reaction, like the day that they pull it off, and then just what has it been like? I guess, you know, the day they introduce him and the fact that Matthew gets to play with his brother, a star in his own right on this team.
You almost can't tell the story of that trade without telling the story of the entire day, because I think we all remember it was a Sunday, and earlier that day, the Panthers traded Mackie Samuskevich to Seattle for and got a first-round pick back.
Yeah.
And you're thinking, okay, this could go two ways, because the Panthers at that point owned the number 9 pick as well. You're thinking, okay, this is either Bill Zito gearing up for something bigger, acquiring another first-round pick, which obviously is very attractive in putting together a package. They already had assets to move as far as draft picks were concerned. Or it gave the Panthers an opportunity to bolster the prospect pool because they had a couple of first-round picks at that point. Turns out it ended up being part of a bigger deal. They used that first-rounder they got back for Mackie Samuskevich, packaged it up with assets they already had, moved it off for Brady Tkachuk, and the rest is history. Great trade. Now you have, like I said, the best top three forward lines in the game. Brady is extremely excited to play with Matthew. We had a chance to talk to him a day or two after the trade was made when he was introduced to the media and everything like that. You could sense the excitement immediately. He and Matthew have obviously had great success playing for Team USA, winning the gold medal, but he was incredibly engaging. Very similar. I viewed it very similar to the way that I viewed the intro introductory day with Matthew a few years back. I remember we had a chance to interview him for FloridaPanthers.com right away the day he was introduced, and I was blown away by how approachable and engaging and talkative and energetic and excited that Matthew was. And I left my first conversation with Brady feeling exactly the same way. So the Panthers, obviously, you take it from there, Markstrom, and then busy adding a lot of other familiar faces in the case of a Radko Gudas, who comes back.
So excited.
This is a team that's going to be really, really difficult to play against. And the move that I think may go under the radar for a lot of folks that don't follow the league extremely closely day to day and might have gotten lost in the shuffle a little bit, when the Panthers acquired Garnet Hathaway from Philadelphia, I said it to Bill Lindsay when we did our draft show right here on WQAM. I said, this is a move that maybe average Joe hockey fan across North America didn't pick up on, but I bet you there were other players and personnel across the league that looked at that and said, they got that guy too? Because if
so, what does he bring to the table? Like, explain.
Garnet Hathaway led the Philadelphia Flyers in hits last year. He hits everything in sight. He kills penalties, and he's plain and simple. If he's not on your time, if he's not on your team, he could be a real pain in the you know what to play against. So
we have a lot of guys like that now.
That can so now you have him in the mix as well. If you're the opposition on a given night, you're going to have to keep your head on a swivel. You're not going to be able to take a shift off against this team. Plain and simple.
I
think it's amazing. It's one thing to say your team's physical, It's another thing to say you might have the most physical team and they haven't even played a minute yet. And everybody that's on the team is known as a basher, except maybe two or three guys.
Yep.
It's going to be fun to watch. I'm excited. I'm excited for, more importantly, I think I'm more excited for health.
Yeah.
Right. And
getting
and
Barkey back. Because,
right.
And how reassuring was that, the World Championships? I know it's a tournament that takes place overseas, and a lot of people, it's happening during the Stanley Cup playoffs. A lot of people may not be paying as close attention to it, but the fact that Alexander Barkov went over there, played for Team Finland in the World Championships, won a gold, was, by all accounts, the best player in the tournament. That was hugely important. We had a chance to talk to him as well, not too long ago, and it was interesting the way he talked about playing in the World Championships. For a lot of guys, if you're on an NHL team that misses the playoffs or you get bounced in round one, maybe if you're feeling up to it, you go over there and you represent your country, play in the World Championships. For Sasha Barkov, who had been injured in training camp, hadn't played all year, he kind of viewed that as the start of his ramp up to the hockey season. Like, this was kind of the start of things for him. And to go and get the positive results he did playing in that tournament, it's a huge building block now for him moving into training camp and into the start of the season.
It has to also be for him, like, God, that the one thing that was gutting for him, obviously you always think about the Panther stuff, but he was, you know, so looking forward to getting to play in the Olympics.
Yep.
And Finland finishes third, and you think to yourself, like,
with him,
they win.
It's
you know?
One guy. With him, they have a chance to win the gold.
They have the chance.
They do. Yep.
You know, and so, I mean, this Anton Lundell, I mean, he just wins. You know, has anything bad ever happened to Anton Lundell? Does he deal with a rainy day? Like, World Championships, bronze medals, Stanley Cups. Guy doesn't even have good car insurance yet. You know, it's insane.
At 24 years old, he's done all this.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. His life, he's got to be the most charmed dude that's just walking the planet right now. Living in South Florida, great hair, Anton Lundell.
At 24, I was just like excited to go to Taco Bell. Yeah. He's got two Stanley Cup rings. He's
ridiculous.
He's got an Olympic medal, a world championship gold, all these things.
Doug, we appreciate it. Go ahead, Leroy. Give us one more.
I always wondered, like, with a guy like Barkov, like, we just took it for granted. Didn't realize how much of an impact he was making because it's hockey, especially me. I can't see the nuances of how much of a difference he's making. And then he wasn't there. And it's like the team looked day and night. And I'm like, did he really make that much of a difference to the Florida Panthers? Because for average hockey guy like me, it's hard to see it. Where in other sports, you have numbers, you have stats that, we're missing points, or we're missing yards, or we're missing the ability to throw.
The best way to kind of draw that parallel to the other sports, and I've said this before too, but if you look at the National Hockey League specifically, Connor McDavid might be able to do things at full speed nobody's been able to do. Nate MacKinnon might be the most explosive player in the National Hockey League, but there's no player in the league that impacts the game in more ways every single shift, whether it's power play, penalty kill, 5-on-5, offensive zone, defensive zone, trying to lock down a tight game late. Sasha Barkov can do it all. And again, if we're drawing a parallel to other sports, he just creates such a matchup nightmare, and he's going to play 18 to 20 minutes a night. He's great in the faceoff circle. Again, you can put him out there in every situation, and we've seen it multiple times in the playoffs against other all-world players. We've seen Artemi Panarin and Nikita Kucherov and Austin Matthews virtually vanish in playoff series, and it's because they couldn't get anything going against Sasha Barkov. So he's one of those guys, Leroy. I think if he were to decide one day, wake up one day, and this would never happen, and decide he just doesn't care about playing defense anymore, he probably could put up 140, 150 points a year.
Right.
But he takes so much pride in the defensive side of things, does all those little things that don't show up on the box score. That is why he's such a great captain, because, you know, everybody else looks and sees this, you know, top 3 to 5 player in the National Hockey League willing to do all these little things that don't show up on the stat sheet, and it makes everybody else kind of fall in line. Paul Maurice has called it the Barkov effect, a crazy effect on his own team, but also the matchup problems it creates. And it's also why you go on the road, home teams have the last change, you go on the road and you have a team like the Panthers have, and you have a guy like Barkov, and a guy like Anton Lundell, who you've mentioned, Brandon, but it just makes it so difficult to match up with this Panthers team. And he is the main reason they are just so difficult to deal with night to night.
Jonesing for the season. Can't wait for it. Doug Plagans, we're looking forward to it. Enjoy the rest of your summer, man. Thanks for stopping by. And we can't wait for the Cats to get going.
Thanks for having me, guys. Leroy, feel better.
All right, I'll try.
It is not hard to destroy a college. Last season, the podcast Campus Files brought you stories of fraternity drug rings, stolen body parts, campus cults, and more.
And now Campus Files is back for another season.
There's a guy screaming into his phone. He's like, I just saw Charlie Kirk get assassinated right in front of me.
Every week is a new episode and a new story.
It was so chaotic. It's almost like a university under siege.
Listen to and follow Campus Files, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, Woody. Well, still scratching my head on what's happening here over the last 6 weeks. Just an amazing turnaround for the Marlins. Craig Mish, pregame and postgame on Marlins TV and host at Sports Grid, joins us this morning. Craig, thanks, man. I know you got a late night and appreciate you coming on. 51-42. There's a zillion great stories going on. What kind of turned around? Like, I know it happened to be June 1st when this whole thing kind of exploded, 25-8 since then. What did you see? Like, I'm just curious with your eyes on this whole thing getting turned around and cleaning up the game at both ends.
Hey, Joe, good morning. Yeah, it's been remarkable. I mean, I did not see this coming. I don't think a lot. Oh, we're all kind of like riding the wave right now. And as you know, being around a team doing so well and being part of the broadcast is even crazier, you know, like to have it play out like this is unexpected. But that question that you just asked me is probably the single most popular question that I'm getting, especially from people who aren't at the games every day. And, you know, may have just been tuning in over the last few weeks, the last month on Marlins TV. I mean, I think that's a plausible question. So the one that I've given the most, Joe, is them calling up Joe Mack and Joe Mack taking over at a very high level defensively behind the plate. He seems to be playing like one of the best catchers in all of baseball. He leads the league in caught stealing, and he missed the first month of the season sitting in the minors.
That's crazy.
I mean, that's crazy. Yeah. Think about that. And then on top of it, his bat has been great too. Like, his bat has been probably better than what they expected. And he's just brought so much to the team at such a young age that I think that's what I point to, is that the quarterback is the most important position in sports. But I do think that the catcher is number two. I mean, the catcher, you're involved in baseball on every single pitch and every single play. And you have to have the confidence of your pitchers. You have to be able to block balls. They have to be able to throw it where they want, and they have to know that you're going to stop it. And he does that. And he's telling guys, go steal on me and I'm going to get you. And he does it. I mean, it's like real Muto range here, what we're talking about. And look at the career that guy had. Yeah. So that's it. I think a lot of other stuff, obviously, Joe, you know, I mean, not a Lopez and Xavier Edwards. I mean, these have been great players, but in April they had those great players too. And then the turnaround only started to me when they called this kid up. So that's my answer.
Hey, I want to ask you about another guy that's changed positions, starting to look very comfortable doing it, but his bat has just exploded like the first half of last year. Kyle Stowers. How much of that you think for him? I thought maybe they took him out of the outfield because they didn't want him pulling muscles and going through all that where it was going to be less running. But whatever it is, he's starting to look real comfortable at first base. But more importantly, he's friggin' hitting right now.
Yeah, he looks like he did last year. And remember, this time last year, he was getting ready to go to the All-Star game in Atlanta. And I think, Joe, that look, there's when they say that you can't really have spring training during the regular season, I think there's something to that. Spring training may not be for results, but it's just simply to get in shape and just to make sure your body's ready for the season. And he didn't have that. And look, he'd never admit it, but I suspect that the month of May was his spring training here. And I don't think he was still even healthy in May. It, look, you know, the bottom half, if you can't use your bottom half for a big guy in baseball, you can't do anything. And he had a couple of different lower leg injuries, one at the beginning of the spring in March and one at the end, and ended up missing a month. And now it seems like he's fully healthy. And I think you see the results too. I mean, he said last night that he feels like good things can happen now every time. He didn't say that bad things could happen back in May, but it sure felt like he was alluding to that. So, yeah, I mean, as long as he stays healthy, it's a jump-off point. And as you mentioned, he really played well at first base. That's been a surprise, too. It's not an easy position, any position, just to pick up, but he's been really good.
So we kind of played rotating chairs here at third base, and then Javier Sanoja just kind of, like, man, to me, he's not a utility guy anymore, although he has played different positions. Leave him at third, man. I love that little fireball being in that lineup every day. What are your thoughts on his third base play?
He's been great, but I don't know that they necessarily agree with that. I think that they would like to scale him to a 4 or 5 day a week player as opposed to playing 7 or 6.
Okay.
Because that kind of player in baseball, when you overuse them, they tend to get hurt. The best example I could give, especially for people who follow the Marlins through the years, is John Birdie. If you remember, John Birdie was like a similar situation. Everyone was yelling, why aren't we playing John Birdie? Why aren't we playing John Birdie? Then we played him and he stole 50 bases and he was amazing. And then we never heard from him ever again because they wore him out. So I think you got to be careful with a smaller framed player. Now, that being said, he'll come up in a lot of big spots. I do expect him to play quite a bit. But if there's one position that I think they need to potentially attack in the next month in terms of trades, I think that would be the position. I think it'd be third base.
Yeah, no, I'm reading this. Be a lot of people saying that same thing. So I'm glad you brought it up. MLB trade deadline, August 3rd, still 3 weeks away. I know what the team has said, and I believe them. I think Bruce Sherman and by the way, Bendix has been unbelievable, and the moves that he's made, they're starting to look like, damn, they're starting to look Tampa Bay-ish for sure. What do you think they do if this continues? I mean, my God, they're 3 games out of first in National League East. There's only a handful of teams with 50 plus wins. They caught the Phillies. What do you do now? What happens?
Well, Joe, if they're in this position and they're 10 games over or 9 games over and a couple of games out of first and chasing the wild card, I'm not going to pour a bucket of water on this thing. That's not what I'm going to do here. So I would expect that if they're in this same position around the trade deadline, that they would push some chips in and try and get in the playoffs and not only get in the playoffs, but I mean, the thought, Joe, of a home playoff game here.
Yeah, how about that?
We haven't had one since 2003. Like, I mean, I think, look, I mean, all in is a little strong here because again, you don't know. And, you know, being transparent with people who are listening, if the Marlins had to go to Philadelphia and play another wild card series, I don't know how that would go. Or if they ended up having to go to LA, I don't know how that would go. I'm just being
honest. That's fair. That's fair.
But at the same time, I think they have got to at least add some pieces to help the team get into the postseason, maybe similar to what happened in 2023 when they added Berger and they added Bell and they went on that run and, you know, they didn't really give up too much and they ended up making the playoffs. I don't think people even remember. They gave up almost nothing for those two players and they made it. So it's a lot to ask though, Joe. I mean, look at their record since June 1st. I mean, can that be sustained? I don't know. But we'll ask ourselves that question, I think, in a few weeks. It's still too early to know.
Yeah. So Clayton McCall was on yesterday and I said, hey, you know, he's been great about coming on. And I just said, hey, Clayton, man, no matter what happens, please don't get rid of outside of Tyler Herro. We've talked about trading Sandy Alcantara more than anybody else in this town. Please keep him. Please keep him. And I think ownership and front office really like Sandy Alcantara. I think they like his attitude as well as being a number one pitcher. What's your take on Sandy Alcantara, who just had a great June?
Yeah, well, you know, Bruce Sherman just did an interview on, I think it was Marlins Radio, and then it was on MLB.com where he, you know, basically called Sandy like a legacy type player, the kind of player that he likes to see, you know, here for potentially a long time. You never know how things can change a day, a year, a week. Joe, I'd be shocked to see, you know, to see him moved. I mean, especially in the, by the way, if they were 500, I'd be shocked too. You know, like I just don't see that moving him. He has a very friendly contract even for next season, an option for $20 million. I do expect that to be picked up. And so I would not even worry about that. You know what I think, Joe? I think that if you start seeing that stuff in the national media about him being traded and stuff, it's coming from people who are just not informed. I don't believe he's going anywhere.
Good. Hey, Otto Lopez. Hey, man, one thing about baseball, anybody that's ever played, it's hard to have, like, every week's good. I mean, it's a hard game, man. To hit the way he's hitting, I think he had his 40th game with at least two hits last night. I mean, it happens every night. It's unbelievable. Here's a guy. What's with the breakout to being maybe the best shortstop in baseball? What am I missing here that a guy can turn things around in his late 20s like this?
It's just unheard of is what it is. He said it himself the other day, Joe. He said two teams threw him away. Two organizations just discarded him. So, I mean, look, players and people change in life. I have nothing to that I can just sit here and pinpoint to you and say, oh, yeah, like all of a sudden I saw this. No one did. His defense is great. He gets two hits every night. The most staggering number here is that he could end up having like a Giancarlo Stanton WAR type number. He may end up leading all position players in Major League Baseball in WAR at the end of the year. And that's how you give out a contract for, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars. Joe, I got nothing for you other than I'm watching the ride. I'm enjoying the ride here. And, you know, he's going to go to the All-Star game on Sunday night, spend some time there. Fantastic. They're always on the field at the end of the game. It's been great to get to know him. By the way, he turns no interview down. You know, don't you love hearing that? Like, always available, always around. Hasn't let any of this stuff get to his head. Tremendous guy.
Well, I'll tell you what. It's one of the things about sports, right? And we were just talking about teams and, like, how good are these guys? We don't know. And then all of a sudden you get this breakout year and it's just – and you're going, well, it's probably just going to be the start and he'll slow down and – he's not slowing down at all, man. He has just been absolutely unbelievable. Speaking of that, I got to ask you, Marcy, looks like, you feel like he's starting to break? I know he went 0-for-3 last night. Starting to break out of it a little bit, does everything great, except, boy, they get him hitting on a consistent basis with everybody else, including what they're getting out of left field and right field right now. Man, is he getting closer just watching him swing?
I'm not sure. I don't know the answer to that. I haven't really got an indication that, you know, somebody has said to me, you know, on the side of the dugout or on the field, like, hey, like it's go time for him. Haven't heard that. So I don't know. You know, it's just one of those things where they say sometimes there's the sophomore slump in baseball. It seems like it's been extended for him. And I would say that he's still working hard. He's still trying hard. I think his defense has kept him in that lineup, Joe, every day, because if you're, you know, not 24-8 and you're 8-24. I don't know that he's still playing every day like
good
that.
Point.
You know, I mean, I mean, you can hide stuff like that when you're doing so well. So look, I don't think that last year was a fluke. And I don't know what this year is, but my guess is he's probably wasn't as good as last year and he'll probably be a lot better than what we've seen in the first 4 months of the season. So I don't know, Joe, we'll have to monitor that one.
He's
somewhere in the middle.
Yeah. He's a pretty confident looking dude, man. And all the guys you watch play and I go, he doesn't look like he's pressing, man. He just looks like he walks around. Like, I know I'm good. I don't care if my batting average is 190 or 290. And I get that. By the way, the guy playing next to him in right field has picked it up, man. He got off to the great start, and then he went into Funko Lola. Boy, he got real funky with them things, but he picked it right back up. He kind of jumped on that bandwagon in early June, didn't he?
Owen Casey? Is that
his name? Yeah, I'm sorry. Owen Casey, yes.
So there's actually you're right. I mean, in terms – we'll start with the good here. But in terms of his numbers, I think, if I'm not mistaken, there's only two – batters in the National League that are rookies that have more home runs than him, which really snuck up if you think about it.
Yeah, it did.
But unfortunately, Joe, he left last night's game with a calf issue.
Saw that.
He had calf tightness. And then after the game, they said that this was something not just from last night. It was from the day before. And he's having, I believe, imaging done today. So I think the fingers crossed on this one, but Joe, you know, with an injury like that and a few days to go until the All-Star break, you know, like this may just be the kind of thing where, you know, they give him some time off and, you know, they can stretch out any kind of time and bring him back after. But you're right. He's been great. I think caution will be the word for him. With only a few days to go until the break, I don't know. We'll have to see what happens today when they say what the issue is with his calf.
I see we got comments coming in here. For you, you mentioned third base at the trade deadline. If you're guess, another starting pitching, a starting pitcher, or more of a reliever. What do you think if you were this team right now? From what you've seen, that maybe you could upgrade.
Yeah, if it's my hat on with this, I definitely think that, and Roberto Hernandez has been great, and he's a right-handed hitter, and any time that they throw lefties at the Marlins, they bring him in and he hits home runs. But I don't think the Marlins have enough right-handed slug to make a deep run in the end of the season in the playoffs. So I think they need a right-handed hitter of some kind, and I believe third base would be the right spot for that.
Okay.
And then the other thing is, it's going to be tough in terms of bullpen because, Joe, you're going to hear like Aroldis Chapman's name being brought up a lot because he's on Boston and they stink and they're out of it. You know, your buddies in San Francisco, they stink. They're going to be out of it. They're going to be trading everybody.
They are bad.
But you know what? You know who the Marlins are fighting for these players? Everybody. Yeah. They're fighting the Yankees and the Dodgers and the Braves and the Phillies. So I can't just say, oh, yeah, they're going to end up with Aroldis Chapman or some great reliever because they're going to have to battle giving up prospects. And I don't know how far down the road they're going to want to do that. But if I had to guess, and we're sitting in this spot, first week in August, right-handed bat of some kind, maybe a third base. And, yes, I think a relief pitcher probably in play as well. Starting, I think they're okay. I think they're in a pretty good spot, and I like how they develop these guys in the minors and bring them up. They seem to do a good job.
Well, they have done a great job. Craig, thank you, man. It's nice to come on when things are really, really good. I was talking early this morning how nice it is for the play-by-play and color analyst on TV to be able to just say, man, this is great. Just great story after great story. You don't get that all the time, so it's nice. Anyway, thank you so much, bud. Appreciate you coming on.
Of course, Joe. Most fun I've ever had doing this right now.
Yeah, no question. Nice to go home, and the wife goes, honey, how'd it go tonight? What'd you think? And like, oh, my God, honey, let's stay up. Let's have some. Yeah, let's eat. I want to talk to you. Nah, it's great. Thank you, bud.
And by the way, Joe, you know the other thing that's happened in the last – everyone wants to go to the games now. Like, people are texting me, hey, you know, tickets. I'm like, wow, okay. Like, maybe something's happening here.
You know what, Craig?
But thanks for having me.
Yeah, but of course. Thank you so much. Craig Mish joining us pre- and post-game on Marlins TV and host of Sports Grid. Always been a good friend.
Every week on the Moth Podcast, real people tell their stories live on stage.
I burst into tears. And I wasn't sure if I was crying because I hadn't been kissed in a really long time or if I had just never been kissed like that before.
To hear fascinating, heartbreaking, and sometimes hilarious stories from astronauts, teachers, farmers, and people just like you, follow and listen to The Moth wherever you get your podcasts.